The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning and welcome to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and this is an auspicious episode of our program because today is the summer solstice. And so the invitation of this program is for our listeners to take a break from the doom spiral of our newsfeed and not to escape the reality of our moment, but to slow down for a brief time, take an hour Saturday morning, and remember the extraordinary richness and wonder of the natural world that we're surrounded by. We're so lucky living here in the Hudson Valley, surrounded by the tidal estuary and the Catskill Mountains, to be, we have access to vibrant ecosystems, extraordinary biodiversity. And so the invitation for this program is to calm the chatter of the human brain for just a minute and think a little bit about what you can encounter when you step outside. Because here we are in Midtown Kingston, and one of the messages I try to say on this show is that, you know, there is no nature out there somewhere else. You don't have to go to the top of a peak or to a distant place. Right here, right now, we are in nature because we are nature. And so, it's inevitable that if you take just a moment and slow down and look around, you'll see something really cool happening. You'll see a creature you didn't anticipate. You'll see some sort of ecological phenomenon unfolding in front of you. And it will enrich your life. It'll enrich your day. For me, I know that I'm a full-time activist in my day job. And I look at the news too much, probably. And I know that my entire day could be changed by 30 minutes taking time to go outside. I'm not a very good meditator. I've tried. But I know that if I walk around and just look, I will see something that takes me out of my, you know, momentary experience and connects me, you know, and we have millions and millions of years of evolution that have developed these incredible senses that we sometimes put to waste, right? But our ability to see, our ability to hear, our ability to perceive is still innate. It's still there. And so right now is a very exciting time to be outside because today is literally technically the start of summer, but it is, everybody is so active. The birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees are just absolutely going full speed right now. And so it's a very exciting time to be outside. And you know, one of the only thing that I say every single episode of this show is that people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. So the idea of this show is to reach out to the awesome people who are doing amazing things in this region and bring them on to be our storytellers and our guides. So every week we talk to scientists, conservationists, activists, artists, birders, people who have developed some sort of expertise in the natural world that they can come on and share with us. And the idea is that hopefully listeners might understand a little bit more and maybe even gain some intimacy with some part of the natural world and understand, you know, when you step outside of your front door, what are you looking at? And you might know that a little bit more. So I'm going to start this episode, which we do every week, with a segment called Who's About Town. Who's About Town is a little bit like the Society Pages, except for it's about the more than human world. And so we take a look at a couple natural history observations, a little ecological snapshot of what's been happening this last week since we were on the air before. So the first thing I'll say is actually not necessarily the natural world, although I would argue that it is. But right after this episode last week, I was so heartened to take to the streets and to go to the No Kings Day march in Kingston. And it was absolutely incredible to see thousands and thousands of people in the streets. And gosh, it was just, you know, everybody's specific Kingston homemade signs about, you know, talking about the last time we had a king and what happened. They burned the city down. But it was a beautiful display of community cohesion and sentiment. And I know that I got a lot out of it just by seeing the reflection of who my community is. Today, as I mentioned, is a very special day. Today is solstice. And I think, you know, everybody kind of knows the basics, right? That solstice means that today is the longest day and the shortest night and the official start of summer. But I think it's also fair to say, and I'd be happy to be argued with this, that solstice is probably the most widely recognized holiday in the history of humanity. People have known, you know, since time immemorial for thousands and thousands of years, you know, and it's a holiday that is not marked by some sort of religious figure or anything else that has happened to anybody in particular. If you're alive on planet Earth, and you have been for the last hundreds of thousands of years, you would recognize this moment because it's very special. And so that word solstice, right? Sol obviously is about the sun, but the stis part was something like stishel, and it was the stillness. So when you're observing the path of the sun across the ecliptic, as they call it, it's moving, you know, further and further north as the season progresses. And then a strange thing happens. And so solstice, technically, some people might be thinking this in their heads, happened about 12 hours ago. It was about 11:45 p.m. last night. But really, solstice is a 4 or 5 day phenomenon. And so what happens is the sun is moving north, 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 and then it kind of slows down and it appears to stop. And that happens for 3 or 4 or 5 days. And then it starts to drift back down to the south. And so that slowdown is it, and stopping of the sun is what we're, you know, that's the phenomenon that we're occurring right now. And of course, the reason this happens, and I'm explaining, you know, perhaps the obvious, but I think it's worth taking a moment to think about, right? The reason that we have a solstice is because our planet is tilted, right? We are on we're spinning on an axis, but we're not right up and down in relation to the sun. We're at about a 23.5 degree angle. And that is why we have a solstice. And so what we're experiencing right now in the Northern Hemisphere is the longest day of the year. And of course, what's happening at this exact moment is the solstice in its shortest day of the year in the Southern Hemisphere. And solstices happen on Earth, of course, but they happen on all kinds of planets, right? And so every planet in our solar system, as far as we know, every planet that we, you know, can imagine has a solstice, and they happen depending on the angle, depending on their distance from their sun. So Venus has a very small axial tilt, for example, just 3 degrees. So it has very little seasonal variation, and their solstices are separated by 3 months if you were on Venus. Whereas Mars, which is our closest neighbor, has an axial tilt very similar to Earth, about 24 degrees, but it has a greater orbital eccentricity, meaning it orbits the sun in a more elliptical shape rather than a pure round orbit. And so as a result of that, the red planet experiences seasonal variations extremely, and their solstices are about 11 months apart. So this is a cosmic kind of moment that we're happening right now. And besides the science of it, right, it's something that cultures from throughout history have marked with festivals and holidays and, you know, ceremonies, and, you know, Neolithic people, from, you know, marked this moment, because it was, for some folks, it was a sign of when to harvest crops. In ancient Egypt, it was it corresponded with the rise of the Nile River. And they knew that the annual flooding might be coming. And different, you know, human monuments, we so much is lost to history, but we know that Machu Picchu, you know, it has structures that were built to be aligned with the solstice. The pyramids in Egypt, Stonehenge, Many of the, you know, great historic monuments of humanity were built to mark or honor or be aligned in some way with solstice. So anyway, a very, very, very cool. Many, and of course, Native Americans took part in solstice rituals, many of which are still practiced today. The Sioux, their sun dance, is related to the solstice. So anyway, happy solstice, folks, and welcome to the official start of summer. And we are definitely, today is kind of a mild and lovely day, but I think if you've been paying attention at all to the news, you will know that we are imminently facing a pretty intense heat wave. And so be careful out there. They're talking about, you know, perceived temperatures, you know, when you add in the humidity, you know, 100 plus degrees. So that could be a bit shocking for folks after this kind of elongated mild spring. All right, so I'm going to say a couple more things from our Who's About Town. I took the Juneteenth holiday, day before yesterday, and went and did a wonderful hike in the Mohonk Preserve. And we went to the Undivided Lot Trail, which is a little known place, lesser known, I should say. It's a beautiful trail in the Mohonk, and they call it Undivided Lot because back in colonial days, it was privately owned, but nobody owned it in particular. It was a collectively owned forest lot, so it was called an Undivided Lot. And now it's protected as part of the Mohonk Preserve. But we had quite an adventure. We tried to get ahead of the storms, but we didn't quite manage that. So we headed into the woods and got caught in a wild lightning storm. And it was quite exciting, maybe a little more than we were planning for. But it really felt like the day that the seasons shifted. It was so tropical. The air was just hot and heavy. And the mountain laurels are in full bloom. Which is something that, you know, if you need an inspiration to get outside, like, do it right now. Because the mountain laurels, my God, they're so beautiful. You know, they're kind of like a rhododendron, azalea, but little, geometric shaped flowers. Also, the tulip trees are in bloom. And coming from the West Coast, tulip trees are something that I never anticipated. They can be the biggest trees in the forest. They grow just absolutely huge, and they're actually a kind of a magnolia, but they have these kind of saucer, you know, sized flowers that are just dazzling, and they are doing their full bloom right now. We also encountered, because it was raining, a whole bunch of red Fs. And anybody who's spent much time walking around in the woods, you know, will know red Fs. But I don't, for me at least, it doesn't matter how many times I encounter one. I still find them to be absolutely just, you know, boggling. A red F is the terrestrial phase of the eastern newt. So they start off in the water, and they can breathe underwater, and then they go, and they're brown, kind of green, and then they come onto land and they turn electric orange with even more electric orange spots all over them, just 3 or 4 inches long. And then they, you know, on a day like the other day when we were walking around, they are all through the forest, and they have, their attitude is like their plan is just to be like, look, I'm toxic, don't eat me. So they don't run away. they move very slow. They don't care if you get really close to them. But they're just incredibly beautiful. And they can live like that for years and years and years. They can walk around in the forest for many, 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 many years. And then at some point, they will turn around and go back into the water. And their third life phase, they turn brown. Their tail gets long and skinny, or kind of flared, and they go back into an aquatic phase, and then they repeat the life cycle and breed there. So right now the red Fs are out, and it's really cool. I will say that I did something on that walk, and I did it again yesterday, that I rarely ever do, which is forget my binoculars. I'm a birder. I bring my binoculars with me everywhere I go. And this week it happened twice that I just forgot to bring them. And at first I was, you know, angry with myself. But then I realized what a good practice that is to just realize what you can hear by you know, using your eyes less and your ears more, and remembering that, especially this time of year, if you're outside, about 80% of the birds that you have the ability to perceive are going to be through your ears. You do see some, of course, and especially if you hear them, you can tune in and see them. But, you know, we saw, like on that walk that I just mentioned in the Mohonk, we saw a lot of weird warblers. We saw a Louisiana water thrush, which is a beautiful little warbler, and they do kind of this bouncing. They constantly bob their tail in this kind of methodical way. We saw a bunch of oven birds, which are beautiful. Also a warbler. They kind of have a little orange mohawk, and they're low in the forest floor. We saw prairie warbler. We saw worm-eating warbler. A whole bunch of cool birds that are out there. And again, you know, you could easily miss these creatures by just not paying attention. But if you slow down a tiny bit, and look around, you'll see them. And another thing is I've also brought up new kind of technology that we have to help us. And so Seek is an app that I often have used because you can identify plants, mushrooms, bugs, really whatever you point your phone at, it'll tell you what the thing is. But more recently, I've started to use the iNaturalist app. And I would encourage folks to do that because iNaturalist has become probably the biggest like community science data collection effort in history. And so what happens is you can point your phone at anything. I did it yesterday at Onteora Lake at a jumping spider, and it said, and immediately the phone knew, or the app knew, bold jumping spider. But because I am signed in to do so, that observation was shared onto iNaturalist, and that means that that data point of that species in that location at that time becomes part of this web of information that is extremely helpful for land managers, for scientists, for conservationists. And so you're actually, but just going about your, you know, business and looking into nature, you're actually contributing to that science. And things are changing so much with the climate crisis and everything that we're facing that these observations are actually very important. Okay. I also want to say a couple more things before we move on to introducing our guest. Thank you, Julie Noble, for being so patient.
You're welcome.
I want to just really give a full-hearted endorsement to get outside. It is so gorgeous right now, and there are so many opportunities to do it. Obviously, just take yourself out. There's the nature bus that the county does, which is free and takes you to lots of our best places from Black Creek to Sopus Meadows, leaves right from Kingston on Saturdays. But also the John Burroughs Natural History Society, if you go to their website, they have both days of every weekend, they've got, you know, free walks that they're offering. Opus 40 is doing some great things. Our alternate host, Chris Baker, who is the proprietor of Chicory Naturalist. And also, actually, I just saw there's a feature in the Daily Freeman about our amazing mycologist friend, Chris Baker. But she is going to be leading some a walk at Opus 40. Also, Justin Wexler, who's been a guest on this show, who has Wild Hudson Valley. He's also doing Thursdays with the Hudson River Maritime Museum out on the Solaris boat. And if you haven't had the opportunity to go out, you know, with a small group on a boat with Justin Wexler, if you're interested in the, you know, indigenous history of this area, he's an encyclopedia. And in that small venue, you can ask him any question you want, and he will go on a as deep as you want to go on that issue. So that's a really wonderful experience. But there's just, you know, endless opportunities to get outside right now. And I will also say that next weekend, a week from today, is the Wild Earth Gala, Moss and Moonlight. And it's going to be a great opportunity, quintessential summer evening in the Hudson Valley at a beautiful farm. And tickets are on sale for a wonderful dinner and an inspiring surroundings with community. So Wild Earth is, you know, environmental education organization, connecting kids to nature. I would highly encourage folks to get out to the Wild Earth Gala a week from now. Okay, well, I've talked enough that we've gotten to the moment that we're going to take a quick break to hear some words from our community.
What does community radio mean to you?
I think of many voices comprising a whole community, a neighborhood, a place to gather. I feel heard.
Radio Kingston, many voices, one community.
Hi, I'm Harv Hillowitz from the Global Center for Social Entrepreneurs Network, or GCEN. We assist U.S. military veterans to become more independent and prosperous. Unfortunately, our vets are some of the most underserved folks in the USA, suffering disproportionate amounts of unemployment, underemployment, homelessness, discrimination, and suicide. The federal government is now cutting VA programs drastically. GCEN is right here in Kingston, and we have exclusive programs just for veterans to become oriented to starting their own business ventures or nonprofits. If you or someone you know is a U.S. military veteran in need, or if you would like to help or sponsor a vet, call 845-590-0925 or find the Global Center for Social Entrepreneurs Network at gcsen.org. Thank you.
Radio Kingston.
Muchas voces. Many voices.
One community.
Hi, I'm Carmel Holt. Join me for Sheroes Radio, Monday nights from 10 to midnight, here on Radio Kingston.
We didn't understand this need for a space that was all women.
We're amplifying and celebrating women and gender-expansive folks in music across genres and generations.
There's so many other spaces that are like patriarchal. We need our own.
I need to be around my women. It's very different to have space with women on the road. And I love that I have these women with me, and this is who I'm moving through the world with.
We're turning up the volume of women's voices in song and conversation.
I'm not just making records. I want, if the world ended, somebody to find these records and have a very good understanding of what was happening at that time.
That's Shiro's Radio, Monday nights from 10 to midnight, here at Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, and anytime at radiokingston.org.
The A.J. Williams Myers African Roots Center is hosting the first Joyful Vibes Community Festival, Saturday, June 28th. This fundraiser for the African Roots Center will embody the spirit of joy, unity, and cultural celebration. There will be live music, a silent auction, performances, food, plants, crafts, books, arts, and more. The event is free to attend and open to all, but online RSVP is requested. Donations graciously accepted. Joyful Vibes Community Festival, Saturday, June 28th, from noon to 5 p.m., at the A.J. Williams Myers African Roots Center, 43 Gill Street in Kingston. To RSVP and for more information, africanrootslibrary.org. Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And if you are joining our show, I want to let you know you can find all episodes of this show archived on radiokingston.org. We're also, as of this week, on all the other platforms, Spotify and Apple, and as a podcast. And you can contact us directly if you've got a burning question about the natural world you might want us to try to answer, or if you have a guest you should suggest we should have on. You can find us, Nature Nuggets, at radiokingston.org. So I am delighted to introduce our guest today, Julie Noble, known to many. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you for having me. Nice to see you.
Wonderful. Thank you for taking time on your Saturday morning to be here. Julie is the sustainability coordinator for the City of Kingston. In which role she helps to shape and direct municipal initiatives related to energy, land use, transportation, education, and citizen outreach, among other duties. And that's a big bucket, among other duties, in your bio. Julie has a bachelor's degree in environmental studies from Binghamton University and is partners with Steve Noble, current mayor of Kingston. So, Julie, there's so much we can talk about because you are so prolific and you do so many things for this city.
Yeah.
And many people listening probably actually are familiar with you, but I wanted to start a little bit by just hearing if you could tell us a little bit about your path into this kind of career commitment that you've established in this community towards environmental and sustainability.
Yeah. So I'm born and raised here in the city of Kingston. my family is still here, still together, going strong, and the rock that holds me on this planet. I grew up on the Hudson River, so we spent our vacations and our time swimming and just traveling along the Hudson or going to the IBM pool. My dad worked for IBM, and so I spent a lot of my time outdoors. My parents, I would not consider them outdoors people. They like to be outdoors, but I wouldn't say that they're like, you know, outdoorsy necessarily. But I was also in Girl Scouts when I was young, and that got me into my love for nature. And I went away to school in Binghamton, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I said, you know, let's do this catch-all, environmental studies. That'll get me a degree to help me do something. Graduated from there. I met my partner in life in high school here at KHS. We actually met in Spain, ironically. And that's a long story that we won't talk about today, but... long story short, I went to school in Binghamton. He went to school in Syracuse. We got married right after that. And while we were in high school, we both started working for the Parks Department here. We knew that we wanted to stay in our hometown. And in order to stay in our hometown and do what we wanted to do, we had to create our own jobs. They didn't exist. A lot of folks that we graduated with in the late 90s from KHS were not staying here. But we did, and we worked our way into the system with the Parks Department. I've been working for the same place since 1998. My entire career, I've been in the same office. Started as doing environmental education, working with, doing kayaking and snowshoeing and birding and eco tours and watershed programming and fishing and all these different things. Looking at the assets that Kingston has and introduce and immersing people in it. You know, the Parks Department here in Kingston had always been very recreation focused, which is fine. You know, softball, basketball, you know, volleyball, all lots of sports for kids and adults. Great. But this was like bringing in the parks end of it. And at that time, we started working with a colleague of ours, Mark Diday, who I think you know. Mm-hmm. He's a birder. Basically from there, started just getting folks outdoors in the city. And then realized that the environmental education needed to be more than, I don't want to say just, but just getting people outside. And it needed to be systems change. And that systems change led to, you know, doing projects and programs that intertwined across different departments, working with the planning department and the engineering department on, you know, designing the city so that it was more, you know, more sustainable, and looking at our solid waste and looking at our energy use. And all of this has led down the road to where I am today. I serve as a project manager for the city, so I manage millions of dollars of grants, dozens of federal, state, and local grants right now, some not grants, just locally funded projects, everything from, you know, making sure Kingston Point Beach is swimmable into the future to launching organic food scraps collection programs to renewable energy on municipal buildings, you know, and the environmental education programs that we started still happen. And so I have staff now that work for me that do those same programs. So there's a legacy in that. And I am still here in my hometown. And I have a son who is 14 and is a redhead, curly amazingness. And he's taller than me. And he's getting into the outdoors, too. And he loves downhill mountain biking, which has given me a run for my money. And he loves skiing. He likes the thrill. And so we spend all of our time outdoors. All of it. I mean, if I could live outside, I would.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, in my office, I don't do air conditioning. It's just like as much exposure to the outdoors as possible. And, you know, I walked here today. I'll be gardening the rest of the day. My milkweed is in full bloom. Yeah. That's something I wanted to add before. Like, we have so much milkweed in our yard. One of the first things we did when we moved in, it was like, okay, we live in this great house. It didn't have anything that needed to be done with it, but we tore up the yard and put it in a garden, multiple gardens. So like vegetables, fruits, and this one big, huge pollinator garden. And the milkweed this week is just like so fragrant and purple. And there's so many bees and so many insects. It's It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so great. And a lot of tree frogs we keep hearing in our neighborhood also. Ooh. I love hearing the tree frogs for whatever reason. We just have a lot of tree frogs in our neighborhood. But yeah, that's my story. That's how I got here. And I've worked for the city of Kingston my entire career.
Yeah.
And I have no reason to think I'm going to do anything else.
Yeah.
This is it. I love what I do.
Well, thank you for that. And Julie and I had an interesting conversation just in the minutes leading up to the show because I'm a full-time activist in my day job. I work for a group called Rainforest Action Network, but I've done human rights and environmental activism my whole life. So that's a title that I'm just used to. It's like I'm used to being identified as that. And I said something about, you know, thank you for your activism. And Julie like gave this face like, what? I'm not an activist. And I was like,
what are you talking about?
Yeah. And I was like, wait, you have dedicated your life to making change for the better in your community. To me, that's the definition of activism. But I could tell that was a novel way for you to think about yourself.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's so funny. And I was just saying to you, like, the same thing. This is now the second time I got nominated by the Chronogrammys and as like a local environmental activist. And somebody told me that. And I was like, well, that's a weird category. I'm not an environmental activist. Who would do that?
Yeah.
And maybe it's me. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I do education and advocacy, which to me is different than activism.
Okay. Well, maybe.
And I'm not like poo-pooing any of it. I don't see myself that way.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. You know, definitions ultimately don't matter. But I mean, if I were to, in my first sentence to describe activism, I probably would use the words advocacy and education. So those would be, you know, if I had to define without using the word.
Change maker. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I know my mind's exploding right now.
All right. Awesome. Well, you know, I one of the things also we talked about was, you know, I don't know if anybody means to be an activist. I didn't mean to be. What I wanted to be was an outdoor educator. That's what was transformational in my life. And I thought, well, this is what I could do best. And then I got distracted with the old growth forest falling and everything in the world and became an activist. But, you know, I know that education and outreach and community engagement are huge parts of what you do. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like within your work, I know there's so many different things, environmental education programs, events, you know, the Conservation Advisory Council. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, that part of your work.
Yeah. So as I said, like this sort of legacy and long-term strategy started with environmental education, with both myself and my husband. For the first 15, 20 years, we were almost, not exclusively, but very closely working with the school district, which still happens, because we both came from the mindset of teach kids, they will become stewards and then we'll change the culture, which is still happening. You know, and now there's Wild Earth and there's, you know, so many partnerships that happen in the community, and that's happening so strong, which is, I think, fantastic. And it's like interwoven in the Kingston City School District. And I really appreciate that. But beyond that was just, you know, but the community, especially now, we have a lot of people moving or have moved here that maybe aren't familiar with this type of area, right? So much influx from folks from New York City area post-COVID. And there's a lot of people driving us. It's interesting how this this paradigm shift. When we first started working for the city, when I first started, it was like a push in and a try to change an existing culture. And it was like, yes, world, we should be doing these things. Jump on our train. Activism, apparently, trying to get folks to be stewards. Now there's so much push from the community. Government should be doing more. We should be doing this. You got to be doing this. And it's driving us. You know, the city is a champion across the state for so much of the work that we do. We go boldly. We go first. You know, we invest. We're doing this. You know, a lot of communities don't have a Julie Noble that wakes up every morning, gets paid to do the work that I do. Lots of communities have champions, but on the books, you know, this is a commitment. But the environmental education has to be across all spectrums, right? So like getting people out on the river, like This is where people drink their the water from. If you're in these other seven communities, this is why we can't eat the fish right now from the Hudson because of time. This is what happens when you put something on the ground up at your house in Midtown. It gets to the Hudson River. You know, all these things. And we also started an Earth Fair. We started that probably 12 years ago. It was at the Forsyth Nature Center for a while. We moved it downtown. We partner with Clearwater now and Radio Kingston and the Eighth Step and Maritime Museum and Catskill Mountain Keeper, New Yorkers for Clean Power, all these different partners. And we bring thousands of people. It's like a community Earth Fair. And we don't charge anything. It's just music and fun and people caring about the earth. And it's outreach. And people do that because I feel like they really want it and they keep driving it. And on a day-to-day, we have several different commissions here that people can participate in if they wanted to engage. We have the Conservation Advisory Council, and that is these are all advisory boards that are appointed by the mayor. And the CAC, which is it's allowable by New York state law, so every municipality in the state can have one. And I'm actually on the New York State Board. I'm the vice president of the New York State Board of Conservation Advisory Councils. And we work on policy, like the anti-idling policy and the non-toxic landscape management plan and, you know, working on form-based code, you know, suggestions, all these different things, working on how to change policy on a city level related to environment, you know, electric landscaping equipment, all those different things. And then there's the Climate Smart Kingston Commission, and that commission works on programming. So that commission hosts the Earth Fair. We host the Repair Cafe that we do, you know, throughout the year. We work on refrigerant management. We work on transitioning, you know, with electric vehicles and electric charging stations and so much more. And most recently, we now have the Community Preservation Advisory Board. So it's been a decade or so that we've been looking at preserving our natural assets as much as possible and understanding in the world and community that we live in, which is, you know, urban for the region, suburban, I guess, on a normal spectrum. How do we balance development, housing, which is so critical, and open space preservation? And now we have a community preservation plan that helps to lay that out, and we have money that comes in through a real estate transfer tax, and we have just recently preserved 70 acres of open space, the largest tract of land that the city's ever purchased. We collaborated with Scenic Hudson. We couldn't have done it without them. And now there's this huge 70-acre, you know, seven parcels downtown. And things like that help us to identify, okay, this space should remain open. These other spaces, like infill development, other locations in the urban core, that's where folks should be living, and that's where the services are. So it's a lot of balance of all that.
Yeah. So much of what you're saying is so heartening to hear, because, you know, when you look at the world at large and the national politics and stories, there's a lot of, you know, fuel for despair. And so it's really amazing to look at our local municipal city level and see so much visionary, you know, not activism, advocacy happening. And first of all, I'll just say that if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Nature Nuggets. We're talking to Julie Noble, sustainability coordinator for the city of Kingston. And, you know, your work is so prolific. There's so many things that we could talk for many, many hours. But it's clear to me that, you know, you have a vision. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing, you know, the first time I met you was at the opening event for the Sojourner Truth State Park, and you had a table out with, like, you know, tortoise shells and feathers and, you know, bones and, you know, nature nuggets, actually.
Yeah.
And I had to push the little kids out of the way to be like, wait, I want to touch, what is this woman doing? And then someone was like, oh, that's Julie Noble. And mm-hmm. since then, you know, I've just really admired the fact that you are, it's clear that you are passionate committed to the well-being of this community.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so there's things like you've been mentioning that are very present, very, very, you know, in the moment in our daily experience. But it's also clear that you have a long-term vision.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things from my observation that you, I don't know if you do call it an administration when you're talking about a city level politics.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That your administration has been exceedingly well at, it seems, is, you know, getting state grants, getting, you know, support and financing for infrastructure for, you know, kind of long-term projects.
Yes.
And so I wonder, you know, if you could talk about, you know, what excites you most when you're looking at those kind of long-term sustainability projects for Kingston?
Yeah, it's interesting. In my role as non-activist for the city, I do a lot of, you know, I do mitigation work, adaptation work, resiliency work. So, you know, with our mitigation work, you know, switching the lights to LED on the streets and, you know, changing our buildings to decarbonize them and reducing solid waste, you know, with organics, things like that. But a lot of what I do, and this is more and more becoming really critical in the Hudson Valley, and more communities are really understanding this because we all have a lot in common, is that we are situated, the city of Kingston is situated on the Hudson River, which is amazing. We're unbelievable assets. Like, our location is so prime. We're like at the Hudson River, we're at the Rondeau Creek, the Esopus Creek, we're at the base of the Catskills, we're super close to New York City. It's like super prime, right? That's why Kingston's amazing. But, and we acknowledge that a lot of the growth for this city and development and reason why this even exists is because of the reliance on the Hudson historically. So with the extraction industries of like brick making and ice harvesting and cement making, communities like Punkaki and areas of our city grew and flourished and remained and still remain. But because of this location on the Hudson River, and because of what we're seeing with increased storms, storm surge, sea level rise, we are really vulnerable. And not just our natural spaces are vulnerable, but our cultural and institutional spaces are vulnerable, like our wastewater treatment plant, which is right on the waterfront. And again, this is not unlike most other communities in the Hudson Valley. Because our wastewater treatment plant is gravity fed, it needs to, you know, be located where it is so it can maintain all the systems. It discharges into the creek after we, you know, process all the water. So there's that. We can't move it, right? We're not moving the wastewater treatment plant. And cultural institutions and restaurants and homes and faith-based organizations are on the river because that's where people want to be. And there's a sense of community and a sense of place and a character that that's what people want to do. But we flood all the time, all the time. I mean, if you go downtown in Kingston, you will find barricades on most of the road crossings that are just there all the time. We don't even take them away. I mean, we have to push them to the side, but it's super regular and normal. And we have Kingston Point Beach, which is one of only four official swimming beaches, according to Department of Health, on the whole entire Hudson River. And it's a destination. It's free. I mean, thousands, if not millions of people go there to cool off. I'm sure if we were to go down to Kingston Point Beach right now, it's filled with people. Tomorrow, today, it's going to be filled with people cooling off in the Hudson. But we're losing it. We're physically losing it. I mean, it just like erodes. And when we have storms and when we have erosion, it's taking the beach away. It's compromising our waterfront. And so what I'm looking most forward to is that we have secured millions of dollars to protect our waterfront. And that's everything from federal funding to physically raise the roads. I mean, we're raising the strand, physically putting the road higher, which is not a small feat considering all the things that are down there. We're raising Delaware Avenue. I have there's a parking lot down in Kingston Point that most people see as a flooded wetland. In my lifetime, it's gone from a usable parking lot to a wetland. And we're embracing that. And half of it's staying as a wetland and the other half we're elevating to a parking lot. We are taking the beach so it can stay in perpetuity. And we have millions of dollars that we've gained from a grant to terrace the beach so that right now you are operating on the bottom level. You're swimming, you're playing, and you can play on all the levels. But as time passes, you don't lose the beach because it's terraced. And all of this is long term. We're not going to see, I mean, we're seeing changes now, but like this is planning for a really long time. And I'm proud to be part of a team that is seeing not only the current impacts, but the long-term investment.
Yeah, wow. Thank you for all of that. I mean, I think the last time we ran into each other in the wild was down there at Kingston Point Beach. And well, at the and you were meeting, I think, with the DEC and different groups and looking at this. And you know, indeed, there is this wetland there, but there's pavement underneath it.
Yep.
And you were kind of like, well, you know, maybe we have to tear it all up, but it's actually already an established wetland.
Yes.
And, you know, but you know, your approach to sort of problem solving and looking at the picture, like what is actually the most... you know, the best holistic way forward
yeah.
in the, you know, in this circumstance, I really appreciated seeing it applied in that way. And as we were talking, there were, you know, red-winged blackbirds and different kind of marsh, you know, birds, you know, singing and, you know, in that active habitat. So I don't know what the latest with that is, but, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. And it's been, I think one of the reasons, besides the fact that it's necessary, but one of the reasons I think that the funding has been so successful is because it's innovative, and whatever we're figuring out, other communities can do, right? Everyone's got wastewater treatment plants. Everyone's got roads that are getting flooded. Everyone's got parking lots that are getting flooded. And we have this parking lot that literally now is a designated wetland.
Yeah.
I mean, it has lots of waterfowl in it. It has turtles in it. It has all these things in it. And like you said, when we started this, because the funding's taken a long time, when we started this, it was like, okay, well, we're going to have to move the blacktop. Of course we would remove the blacktop, because you can have a natural habitat with blacktop in it, you know, asphalt. And now, I mean, a plant that we don't necessarily want, the common reed, the Phragmites, which, you know, we would normally say, and that's like the big fluffy one, like the big fluffy squirrely tail on the top. You touch it once and a million seeds fly all over the place. It's an invasive species, but it's everywhere. And we're not even going to try to remove it because it's actually helping us. It's busting up through the asphalt, and it's the reason we're having this wetland succession.
Right.
Like, thanks, Common Reed. We don't love you, but all right, you're doing a good thing. And so it's very dynamic, and lots of folks on a state level are looking at this. Department of State, DE's, Department of Environment and Conservation. It's all like, well, what's Kingston going to do? Like, what's going to happen? How is this going to work over time? Is something from the asphalt going to leach into the wetland? Is this going to be compromised? We don't know. We have no idea.
Yeah.
We're figuring out.
Well, you know, once again, you know, in this time of sort of just like void of leadership on the national and global scale, you know, I think a lot of us are looking towards, you know, our community level leadership. And that's really when it comes to the climate crisis, when it comes to our lived experience on a daily basis, when it comes to, you know, everything else that are, you know, we have values to care about. It is really heartening to live in a community with community leaders who are thinking about these kind of things.
Yeah.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. We're talking with Julie Noble, lifelong resident of Kingston and sustainability coordinator for the city. And there's so much more we could talk about, but I think we will take one more break to hear some words from our community.
This is a pride moment from Radio Kingston.
Well, you know, I come from the old days. There were about usually three or four gay bars in town, in New York, this is in Manhattan. When police came in and inspected periodically, and if anybody was sitting too close, you had to separate immediately. And actually, there was a system in one of the places where the lights would blink. So you stopped dancing in the back room together, and the police would then come in and inspect. If you were a man, quote-unquote man, allowed to wear six items of women's clothing, a certain number. If you had more than that, they took you in to jail.
This has been a Pride Moment from Radio Kingston.
Hi, I'm Teresa Detweiler from Ulster Literacy. For nearly 45 years, we've provided adults in Ulster County with the literacy skills they need to navigate their daily lives. We train and support volunteer literacy tutors to work with adult learners towards achieving their personal goals. Whether it's filling out a job application, communicating with a child's teacher, or obtaining a driver's license. Literacy transforms communities. If you'd like to help a neighbor learn to read, write, or speak English, you can find out more by registering for an upcoming info session. Call us at 845-331-6837 or visit us at ulsterliteracy.org.
Greetings, blessings, and salutations. And I'm inviting you to the Miss V Show, the musical journey for your soul, on Saturday nights from 8 to 10 p.m.
Show me love.
You are love, you are loving, and you are lovable. Take a break for love.
Now that I am love.
Now that I am love. Love is you.
Saturday Night Love on Radio Kingston, 1490 AM, 107.9 FM, and anytime on radiokingston.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and today we are talking with Julie Noble, lifelong resident of Kingston and the city's sustainability coordinator. And I will just say that if you've just caught a little bit of this conversation and you want to hear the whole thing, this whole episode, like all of our episodes, will be archived at radiokingston.org. Also is put up now as a podcast on Spotify and Apple and the other places that you get such things. We also have a burgeoning Instagram presence. So if you do that, you can find us at the handle HV Nature Nuggets. And let's see, what else? We have an email, naturenuggets at radiokingston.org if you want to contact us directly. So we, you know, have reached the last sort of 10 minutes of our show. And Julie, I could talk with you for hours and hours about the excellent work you do advocating for our community. But there's a couple things I want to... Well, first of all, this last, maple season or early spring had the pleasure of going out to the public day at New Beginnings, which I believe is actually in the city limits?
No. It's in Marbletown.
That's in Marbletown. Okay. Well, it's not far outside the city limits.
Super close.
Of Kingston. And our guide through the process was the one and only Julie Noble. And I actually learned a lot. I'm from the West Coast. I learned a lot I thought I knew about maple, the process of maple harvesting, but I realized I had a lot to know. But I wondered if you could just, talk a little bit about sort of the origin and status of New Beginnings.
Yeah. So just outside of Kingston on Route 209, it's like 12 minutes from my house in Kingston on the road, is New Beginnings Farmstead. It is a farm that is operated by a couple that works here for the city of Kingston. And it was historically, prior to them, it was a cattle farm. They took it over and had a lot of vision and said, we don't want to do cattle. And in our second lives here, we want to start New Beginnings. And New Beginnings to them meant an event venue and maple production. So it's 120 acres. It runs from 209 back to the rail trail. So if you're ever riding on the rail trail, after you go into the woods, when it's like along 209, when you cut into the woods and you're riding along to the south, if you ever look to the right and you see a huge solar field, that's their parcel as well. So there's a 10-acre solar field, 2 megawatts, which is amazing. So basically we farm solar, maple, and there are events that happen there. So we do weddings. And so these are friends, acquaintances at work that we had a while ago. And one day I went out, just like you, I went out and I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. And they were splitting wood. And I'll tell you what, I hadn't split wood before. And they're like, oh, you want to help? And I said, I guess, sure. And the process of splitting wood, and now we're not talking an axe and a piece of wood vertically on a post. We were using a powered splitter that takes these huge, huge diameter logs and splits them in like 8 or 12 pieces at one time, right? And what I loved about it is that I had to be fully present. Mm. Full presence. I can't think about anything else. I had to be fully present so that I didn't get hurt and no one else got hurt. And the long story short is that's how I got hooked on. And I said, okay, well, if this place is close, I can help out splitting wood. Then it became like, oh, Julie, she's a really good educator. And like, that's when she's in her zone. When she teaches, she's in her zone, and she could teach our maple programming. And incidentally, when I was going to college in Binghamton, and my partner at the time was going to Syracuse, I worked at a nature center in Syracuse, and they did maple programs there. And I learned the ins and outs of it. And I was like, all right, fine. I know a lot about maple. And so now I go out. I'm part of what we call the A-Team. It's four of us, all who work for the city of Kingston. And there's lots more family, their family, that helps out. And we make maple syrup. And it's sold as Twisted Trees. Mm-hmm. And it's also sold as New Beginnings, you know, maple. And it's super fun.
It's really neat. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at a list of like 76 things that we could talk about, and we have about 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
And so the one just, you know, kind of self-interestedly that I'm hoping to have you address, because it kills me that we're throwing away our natural waste, you know, into the trash every day.
A solution.
And we want to do a backyard compost, but we haven't gotten around to it yet. But I know that the city is working on a community-wide. Can tell us about this.
Yes. So we have a program called Kingston Organics. And it started out 5 or 6 years ago. I got a grant through the Department of Environmental Conservation to evaluate our waste stream. Like, what is in it? Is it mostly food? Is it recyclables? What are people throwing out? Can we take the food out of it and compost it or do something with it so it's not going to a landfill? Because our landfill is 250 miles away, Seneca Meadows Landfill in central New York. And that is 55 tractor trailers per day going up there from here, from Ulster County,
really?
Bringing solid waste to sit in perpetuity in a landfill.
Wow.
So I said, okay, well, we determined that 27 to 30% of our garbage is food. So if I can get a third of the trash away from the landfill, that's substantial. So we looked around to other communities, who's doing this. People weren't really doing it. So Kingston took the lead, as we do, and we said, we're going to figure this out. And so we started Kingston Organics. It started 2 years ago. We're in phase one, and we have three phases planned. Phase one is a drop-off program where around town you'll see a dozen Rubbermaid sheds on the side of the road. They're usually in parks, but some are on the side of the road. They're locked only so that I don't have animals getting into it. People can sign up. It is free. It is voluntary. You don't have to do it. And you can drop off your food scraps. All food, any food, raw food, cooked food, meat, dairy, bones, veggies, grains, bread, anything. No pet litter, none of that. But anything that was, is, or could be food goes in it. We collect that once a week. We drive it 5 miles to Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, not 250 miles to the landfill. And 5 miles from here, they turn it into compost in 60 days and they sell it. And I have thousands of families registered.
Yeah.
And that's phase one. And people are putting their gross food in their car and driving it to these things for no incentive. And they're still doing it. Phase two, which is going to start in January or next in the spring, is curbside collection and then commercial curbside collection.
There you go. So there will be potentially curbside collection of compost.
In 26.
All right.
Yep.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, that is it. Yeah, diverting the waste stream, you know, to that degree. I actually had no idea that our trash was being taken 200 hours away.
Yes.
Well, Julie, thank you so much. We've been listening to Kingston Sustainability Coordinator, definitely not activist, Julie Noble, talking about just a little bit of her extraordinary work advocating for this community, looking towards the long term, helping with the infrastructure. And I just want to say thank you so much, Julie, for everything you do and for taking time Saturday morning to come and tell us a little bit about it.
Thanks for having me.
Hope to have you back.
All right.
Cheers.
Yeah.
give myself to you completely.